Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor. With me, I got Megs and I got Josh.
Good evening.
I'm scanning you. Ooh. Everybody out there, just know that.
I was wondering what was going on.
Yeah, you've been scanned.
And so the movie that we watched was Scanners. But before we talk about that, I wanted to just briefly or have a brown moment.
Oh. The brown moment.
Yep, yep.
Trevor Brown.
Yes, yes. Yes.
That's what we named it.
God, I thought it was something with poop.
No. I'm not a fecal man.
He's a fickle man, but not a fecal man.
Yes, yep.
That's true.
Yep. Because we were talking about secret programs, psychic warfare.
Talking about the Minister of Goats, is that what we're going for?
Not exactly them, but they do fall under that, which would be MK Ultra. And I'm not going to get really far into it. I'm just going to go over briefly what MK Ultra was, because there's a lot of information. You can find books, many articles, probably quite a few podcasts on it. It is a part of the it is Americana. It's part of our culture. It subverts every art form that makes up American culture, and it has truth. Like, there's some truth in a lot of those exaggerated stories that art was based on. But the Project MK Ultra was a human experimentation program that was designed and undertaken by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, to develop procedures and identify drugs that could be used during interrogations. Sometimes in order to force confessions or maybe brainwash or do psychological torture. Drugs were pretty prevalent through all of that. The MK and the Ultra, there's no significance to it. They would...
Just a fun name they made.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Somebody just took some letters out of a hat and then a name out of another hat, and they're like, this is what it is. But before MK Ultra began in 1953, it began in 1953 approximately and then was stopped in 1973. LSD was a big part of what the CIA used in their interrogation methods. They also used other drugs, heroin, marijuana, MDMA, amphetamines, barbiturates, mushrooms, mescaline, anything that has been used in human history was tried. They also used other types of psychological treatments, such as like electric shock therapy, hypnosis, sensory deprivation, verbal and sexual abuse, and were included in their forms of torture. A neat thing, if you ever go into the MK Ultra history, is Project Artichoke, which was before the CIA was formed. It was the OSI, the Office of Scientific Intelligence, and they partook in quite a few illegal activities, mainly doing experiments on the public. There are some documented cases where our government in previous decades and the previous century poisoned a neighborhood in San Francisco to see what the effects would be of this poison. And pretty scary.
Now they're all 49er fans.
Yep. But the end of MK Ultra was 1973, and then there was a church committee in 1975 who was a senator. This was under Gerald Ford's presidency, where they started called the Rockefeller Commission, to see what the CIA was up to during those times. But they, nothing really came of it other than just information being released to the public saying, oh shit, there was, you know, some covert and some very off the books stuff being executed by a branch or an organization of our government on the public. When the program was stopped in 1973, there was a big when the CIA had decided to shut down MKUltra, a huge document destruction event happened. The CIA individuals at the time destroyed a bunch of documents, except for about 20,000 documents, which led to a bunch of new Senate hearings in, I think it was like 1977.
Is this like Watergate connected?
Watergate, I think, I don't recall directly, but I believe that Watergate was sort of the gate that released all of this information, or was the, oh shit, they're about to try and get their hands on all this information because of what just happened, right. And that I believe that's what led to the destruction of all those documents, minus the 20,000.
Because what, Hoover was connected there, supposedly, right?
No, Hoover was not, because no. Hoover was in the FBI.
Oh, he was in the FBI.
Yeah, the FBI and the CIA during that time, they weren't really talking as much. They did share some information, but it was still very compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. There may have been some overlap in somewhere in there.
Yeah, because I looked it up and it was 71 to 74 on that one, and that was about bugging other political, people. So
yeah, and that may have led to that, but
you know, I feel like that we should have that done though, because you know, they strip our rights, we should strip their rights.
Sure,
bastards.
I agree, and I just wanted to, and I would like to go over a couple notable. Alleged subjects. I'll do some documented subjects that were actually in some of the MK Ultra projects, because the MK Ultra spanned a numerous amount of research, and it also spanned numerous colleges and across the world. So Allen Ginsberg is an individual who has a direct tie to an MK Ultra funded. Like, a lot of these were funded by MK Ultra. They weren't carried out by the CIA, but they were definitely funded by the CIA.
It's like you go and get a grant, you don't get it from here, but then the MK Ultra guy goes, yeah, hey, here's some money, fuck around.
Yes.
Give us your findings.
Ken Kesey Kesey, I think. The author for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And then some alleged subjects, who a couple of them have some conspiracy ties. James Whitey Bulger was allegedly a subject while he was a prisoner. Ted Kaczynski, he was an alleged subject because he partook in Harvard. He partook in a psychological experiment. Sirhan was alleged to be one of these subjects. And then Charles Manson, he was allegedly had taken part in a drug-induced psychological experiment funded by the CIA. It's very intriguing and entertaining to see how far the nefarious of just human beings, how nefarious they can be. From what I've understood, a lot of what was done by the CIA during this time was just in fear that the Russians were doing the same thing, but the Russians were never doing the same thing, where they were never doing that at all. They were trying to make nukes and just subjugate their people. That's what the communist country was doing at the time.
We got to do something during the Cold War, though. Come on.
Well, yeah. Well, and it was relatively a slow time around then. It was really cold. It didn't pick back up until the 80s when Reagan got into office, and then the threats of nuclear attacks were on again. What is the Amateur Movie Review Hour? Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we use to provide us with the movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend. All right. So tonight's movie is Scanners. It was written and directed by David Cronenberg. The actors are Jennifer O'Neill, Stephen Lack, Stephen McGoohan, or Goohan. I'm not sure exactly how.
Steve McGoohan.
And then Lawrence Dane and Michael Ironside. The release date was January 14th, 1981. And the runtime was 103 minutes. I think 10 minutes too long. They could have cut out 10 minutes somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Josh, why this movie? I think I know the answer.
Well, I've never seen this movie. I actually brought a lot of things to light. Like, because I love Cronenberg. I didn't even know this was one of his fucking movies. I had no idea. I was like, oh, Cronenberg, cool. Something weird's going to happen. Doesn't it? I watched Cronenberg movies not knowing they were until like later on in life, because I just never paid attention to directors, honestly, for when I was a kid, you know. Like, I watched the movie Naked Lunch thinking there was going to be some tits in it.
Sure, yeah.
Naked Lunch. They're going to be eating food and boobies are out. That's not what happened. There was a fucking typewriter that was talking to him and it turned into a bug.
Yep.
Weird movie.
Yep.
Yeah. But I like that movie. It's a good movie. Check it out.
Yeah.
But
Peter Weller.
I think this is the best. Like, listen, Michael Ironside has never starred in anything in his fucking life where he's the main guy, I don't think. He's like the other guy. This is a good example of him being the bad guy, though. And he's like,
yeah,
the bad guy. And I think he gets the most screen time. He's young, too, you know. So yeah. Not that he doesn't have the full cul-de-sac going. He's got some hair. You know, yeah. It's a good time for the Ironside.
It is a good time for the Ironside.
So, yeah, that's why I picked this one. I'd never seen it, and, you know, I felt like it was a good representation of it. So,
this is the movie that he has more of a second lead, I guess. Or, like, he's the second lead in it compared to everything else that he's been in.
Well, I mean, it's him, and then at least but he can act. The other guy was just cardboard.
The other guy was not... Yeah,
it was
Stephen
Lack. He lacked fucking acting experience is what he lacked.
Yeah, he was incredibly wooden. And even Jennifer O'Neill, I've always loved her, but she was just, it felt like she was asleep.
Yeah,
she was doing a little sleepwalking through this film.
I think it's just the effect of the director, though. You know what I mean? And like whatever, like either lack of experience. Or just he didn't get his chops until later, kind of.
Yeah,
all of his movies had that droning.
Money. There was a money issue. There were a lot of issues.
Yeah.
The actors he hired were not up to par.
Oh yeah.
Jennifer O'Neill was a model. I thought she was pretty when I was a kid, but I don't think I realized she's not that great an actress. You know?
Well, they didn't go for a strong shoot. They should have showed them boobies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the 80s.
It was.
So it was time for boobs.
It was technically the 70s.
To time for boobs.
It released in the 80s, but it was filmed in the 70s, and it's a very 70s film.
It
represents 70s. Yeah, it is that weird thing where you look at everybody and you know, like Patrick McGoohan, he was known for The Prisoner, the TV show The Prisoner.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
He was the prisoner.
Which was very fucking cerebral.
Yeah, he was The Prisoner. That's what he's famous for. That's what he's known for. And then for some reason I had to look it up because I thought remember they remade The Prisoner?
Yeah, with Caviezel.
Yeah, yeah, and I thought that he was still around back then. I was thinking, did he make an appearance on that? But I don't. I don't even think he was alive by the time that came out.
Yeah, I don't. I only know of it.
I think he was.
Okay.
Yeah, he and I, but I just don't. I didn't see anything that maybe he did make an appearance.
Sure.
But I do know that that show kind of brought, there was a resurgence to his career where they started talking about him a little bit again. So that's why I knew who he was when I saw this. I'm like, oh, there's the prisoner, because he was all over the place kind of when they're like, oh. Back then, if you remade a show, they actually talked about the old show. Now they just remake the show and they never tell you there is ever an original.
Sure. Yeah.
You don't like, they don't talk about it. But back then they were kind of like, oh, here's the original. And they started playing the original on certain like channels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Back when we had, you know, like when, you know, you could just turn on the TV and there's a rerun on.
Yep.
Good Times.
Yeah. Good Times was on. Yeah.
Yeah. Good Times was on.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
The late great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This had only been a movie that I had heard of and seen in like special effects clips. So, you know, it's like great special effects, you know, for the head explosion, great special effects.
There's this movie really has two aspects. If you're like a Cronenberg junkie, it's going to be on your list.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And if you're into special effects, that's the only, it doesn't have a real cult following.
It does have a cult following. It was pretty popular at the video store back in the day.
Yes.
It was one of those movies that you always noticed the cover because, you know, tapes before, you know, back when tapes were, because they really stood out a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
But you always recognized the cover of this. And anytime you talked about Cronenberg, they always had this, the picture of this in the background or somewhere.
I think Videodrome was his real good one, though.
They always like, if you looked up Cronenberg, or if you talked about Cronenberg, they were always pushed. There was a poster of this movie in the background, or something. You were always seeing images of that just scary scanner man, you know, like it was so scary. And I mean, it wasn't something I watched as a kid. I didn't even watch it when I was older. I'd seen it probably on television at some point. I never rented it.
Yeah,
I didn't bother with it. Maybe I played it in the video store on the TVs there.
Because
it doesn't have a lot of, you know, there's not really language that would be jarring for customers.
Outside of the you know, beginning portion of the movie.
Well, they never
movie.
Look up. Like, the last thing, it's, you can put anything you want on there as long as there aren't a bunch of F-bombs and other random, because that's when the customers start looking up like, what are you playing in here?
Yeah.
You can play any, like, as long as they don't look up and see some boobs, they were usually fine.
Yeah, this was always one that I had, even young, being going and renting other horror movies and looking at that one, I'm like, it just doesn't grab me. It doesn't grab me. And it still didn't. I was still not really plussed by this
movie. But I want to see this movie. I want them to remake it. I guess they were supposed to remake it, and it didn't happen. The director, the guy who was supposed to, I can't remember who was going to do it.
This is a movie that, it's because it lacked budget. He wanted brains blowing up everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted that over the top.
But I think that the only way it'll ever get remade, you know, because somebody else was going to do it. And then they said, you know, somebody was like, whatever happened to that? And he said, I wanted Cronenberg's blessing and he didn't give it to me.
Okay. Well,
That's what happened with that. That's why we didn't get a remake. And it's not that I think that some things need to be remade because they didn't have the budget. They didn't have, maybe the writing was weak or the acting was weak. There are a lot of things that could really stand for a remake, and this is
sure. You could even write an MK Ultra in there.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. I always like it when they throw a little of that in there, you know? I mean, you'll see it in other things.
Yeah.
Like Firestarter.
Yep. Like that. Yeah. Well, you guys want to get into this spoiler-filled review?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, Meg, you unscrew that water. The movie starts with credits and some imposing orchestral music composed by Howard Shore, which I was really surprised about. Like, all right, he's starting young, got to get your start somewhere. Cameron Vale, played by Stephen Lack, enters a mall food court through an emergency exit-only door, steals a cigarette from some random guy, and keeps on strolling through the mall, not looking sus at all. Cameron eats an abandoned hot dog in the food court as he overhears a pair of gossiping middle-aged women. There's some high-pitched tone that begins to play as the woman writhes in agony. Two official-looking trench coat guys give chase after Cameron, who was having facial spasms during the woman's seizure. One of the official trench coat guys shoots Cameron in the hand with a trank dart. Cameron flees up the escalators, jumping from one to another when he is cornered. But before he can escape, the sedative takes effect and he curls up into a fetal ball on the escalator. Later, when Cameron awakes, he finds that he is strapped to a bed in a lit large brick room. There are folding chairs in the background. Dr. Paul Ruth, played by Steve McGowan, approaches the hindered Cameron. Dr. Ruth explains that Cameron is a scanner, and it is the source of all Cameron's agony. Dr. Ruth wants to help Cameron in order to do that. Cameron has to be subjected to all the voices of the people that are invited into the space by Dr. Ruth. This causes Cameron to have a seizure, overloaded by all the psychic noise. There's some scary electronic music plays while Cameron twists and contorts as the crowd of onlookers sit motionless, bombarding him with their thoughts. All of this is being recorded by CCTV, which doesn't come back. Yeah, it does, because that's how that one guy ends up spying on him. Dr. Ruth injects Cameron with an unknown substance. Soon, the cacophony of voices is silenced. Dr. Ruth says that they can talk now. We cut to the exterior, and to the exterior of the Consect building, which is 15 stories tall. I roughly counted. Yes. We cut to the interior, where a man in a suit and tie stands before a crowd asking permission to scan people. He informs everyone of the possible side effects of being scanned. He also informs the attendees that the doctor is in the room. Oh, and no one can leave once the scan has begun. A volunteer does stand up, and it is Daryl Revick, who's played by Michael Ironside. The scanner explains the rules to Daryl, to which he acknowledges. Then the scanning happens while pulsating music plays. Daryl and the suited man start spasming as their faces contort and twitch. The suited man does not appear to be having an enjoyable time. The crowd becomes more attentive to the demonstration. Daryl seems very relaxed to the suited man. Suddenly, the suited man's head explodes in front of a bunch of frightened and shocked onlookers. A company man grabs a calm Daryl and the on-scene doctor. I think that's one of the best head exploding special effects. Practically, it was a pretty seamless cut, but it was a quick cut because you just went from Daryl right over to that shot and it just went boom.
Well, you got to figure when that came out, that was just so spectacular.
Oh sure,
you know, I'm sure people were expecting it after the first few viewings and everybody started talking. But still, I mean, even if you know what's going to happen, you're still like blown away by that scene, especially in 1981.
Yeah.
Just imagine what he would have done with like the alien, you know, the chest burst scene.
That would have been cool. Oh, that would have been
fucking rad, man. Fucking rad, I said it.
Did you say rad?
Yeah, because it's 80s and 70s stuff and everything was rad.
Radical.
Back then.
Radical.
Radical, man.
They did have like white chunks in there too. Simulate bone. So the company man, now with a gun to Daryl's skull, forces him into a stairwell in order for the doctor to inject Daryl with a drug, which we will find out later is called ephemeral, the same substance that Cameron was injected with by Dr. Ruth.
The Dr. Ruth thing was just getting me the whole time.
I loved it. I was like, he's Dr. Ruth.
It was hard to take that seriously.
I don't think she was a thing yet, though, was she?
She didn't become a thing for... She was around. I mean, she had probably written several books by then, but sure. I don't think she was a household name until, you know, like the 90s. The 80s. It was the 80s. But, yeah. You know, I think it was kind of that whole, like, Phil Donahue show and stuff like that, where they were really getting... all these different people were becoming popular from interview shows and things like that, so...
Something like a man in red rim glasses.
Yeah, I mean, she was definitely, like, I'm sure some people knew who she was.
I would imagine,
you know, like
so.
Dr. Spock, you know, like, sure. They've written their books, but it's not until they start making TV appearances that people are like, oh.
Like Anne Rice.
Okay.
Fucking Anne Rice.
You want sexy fucking vampires?
Sexy vampires? Oh, yeah. Although eventually Anne Rice like went really weird with
it. Yeah, she got weird.
It's like, okay, weird decision.
Yeah, she got weird right when she was really making the money.
Mm-hmm. I went pretty far in that series. I went, I think, to Blood and Gold, which was like the fourth book, like the vampire side of it. The third, I don't know. It was the fourth one.
Was that part of the Queen of the Damned stuff or whatever? Or what was
it? He had a part in it. I believe it was after Queen of the Damned, though. It was more the story of Marius and like how he came about, which was cool. But Daryl is using his Daryl uses the scanning his scanning ability to make the doctor inject himself and not Daryl. So then Daryl pretends to be drugged. And then we cut to the interior of a car that's driving through the rain as some CONSEC men and the company men are escorting Daryl. There is also another trailing escort car that soon crashes into a wall because Cameron forces him. Daryl forces it to? Yeah, because he has control. He has the control of that guy's mind, and they crash into the wall. And the other men who are driving Daryl and the company man stop to help their colleagues. And Daryl capitalizes on that event, forcing the company man, CONSEC guy, to shoot the other two guys. And then he shoots him. Then Daryl forces that man to shoot himself. And Daryl escapes unscathed into the night. An old man from CONSEC, who I think is the CEO, explained now the public knows about their dirty dealings with scanners, and that they also have a new director of internal security, Braden Keller, who is played by Lawrence Dane.
Braden Keller is 8 years younger than I am when he did this movie.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he was 42 when he made this movie. Aging was so different back then. I was like, who's this guy? He looks kind of vaguely familiar. And then I looked at his picture on IMDb, and it's him older. And I'm like, that guy's aging better. He looks younger in his older years. And then I looked at his age, and I'm like, that guy's a few years older than my mom. And my mom had just had a baby when this movie came out. You know, that kind of disturbed me. And then I started thinking about how it related to me. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy's younger than I am. Like, that disturbs me. I don't think, like, that he was an old guy in this. Like, he was very old. He reminded me of a lot of those 1980s, like, cop show people who were all old. And then you find out later that they're all much younger.
Yeah. Like, really?
Like Wilford Brimley.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He looked like he was 75, mm-hmm. but he was
40. It's like 40.
In his 40s, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he did the thing, he was what, 40?
Yeah, I'm guessing, because he was pretty damn young in that.
And when he did Cocoon, he was in his mid-40s to late 40s, yeah.
Jeez,
I don't think he was 50 yet.
No, he was in his 50s.
Grandpa.
Was he?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you could be a grandpa at 50, but he looked more like a 70-year-old man in Cocoon.
Yeah.
Like, he looked ancient when he was doing the diabetes commercials.
Oh, yeah.
What year did it come out?
80-something?
85. And he was born in 34.
So 51.
Okay.
Yeah, still, no.
So my age. He was my age when he did Cocoon.
But retiring was a different thing back in the day. They're like, you retire in your 50s, not now. They're like, no, you 70. You get 70. I don't know why.
I know. Like, are you an old Asian woman?
It was starting to go that way. I don't know why.
I did not believe that Cameron was older than Kim. Stephen Lack was supposed to be older than Jennifer Hudson. I don't believe.
Oh, Jennifer O'Neill.
Jennifer O'Neill. Sorry. In this movie, I don't believe that to be true. I was like, there's no way. It's like, you don't look older than her.
She had, like, they frosted her hair with grays or something.
That's what it looked like. That was a style. Everybody was doing the frosted
grays.
It was a weird color blonde that came out. Like,
I wonder if that was a sex thing back in the day.
It was really popular. Everybody was doing it. Farrah Fawcett was doing it. It's a weird frosted, and it came out in kind of a weird, it was really brassy. It was weird.
MILFs now. It was frosted grays back in the day.
Yeah, it was frosted grays. Yeah.
We walk in the disco.
Ooh, look at all them frosted grays.
Girl dancing, frosted grays everywhere, bell bottom pants.
Keller is a no-nonsense man, and he wants to leave behind all the hippie research. Just focus on the tried and true method of warfare. Dr. Ruth is not happy about that decision, and he questions Keller about the thoroughness of his background checks performed on the attendees. Dr. Ruth is convinced that an assassin is responsible for the attack at CONSEC. Keller in turn gives up that CONSEC believes the assassin is a scanner. Keller tries to place the blame on Dr. Ruth, but he expertly escapes that attempt. Instead, Dr. Ruth proffers that there is another group out there that has a better program than CONSEC. And the board gasps. All those old men can't stand the fact that somebody might have something better than them.
Never can.
Dr. Ruth says that Daryl Revick may be the leader of the underground scanners. The CEO seeks the guidance of Dr. Ruth, to which he says, eliminate the competition. But how? By using the secret scanner that Dr. Ruth has quite conveniently found, Cameron Vale. We cut to the large brick room where Dr. Ruth is interviewing Cameron about the new clarity in his feelings. Cameron inquires about the term scanner, and Dr. Ruth then tells him it is used to describe telepaths or other people who have similar abilities.
Just that. Oh, God, the acting.
They're freaks. You're freaks. You're freaks of nature.
It's like he was very blunt.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, it's you guys, whether it's radiation or mutation, you guys are freaks.
Yeah. It's like, all right. Okay. Clear enough. It's now that we learn that we learn and Cameron learns that Dr. Ruth is a psychopharmacist. Basically, he's just a licensed drug dealer. That's all that means. It means he can go to the pharmacy and be like, can I get cocaine? Can I get heroin? Can I get morphine? And I'm going to put that together and I'm going to prescribe you this drug. It's really fun to be a psychopharmacist. The doctor and patient talk about the woman at the food court, about the voices from the observers, and what happened after the ephemeral. Dr. Ruth mentions he can help Cameron with the controlling of the voices. All the while, Keller has been watching from the CCTV. Cameron watches some film of Daryl Revick during his inpatient stay at Crane Psychiatric Institute in 1967. It is noticeably clear that Daryl is very troubled and temperamental. After an outburst in the film, Daryl removes a bandage from his forehead to show a fresh drill hole in his forehead between the eyes. Dr. Ruth uses the fear of Daryl's past to convince Cameron in joining him to find the dangerous scanner and stop his terrible plans. Keller meets with Daryl at an elevated rail car station. I'm not sure where this is, like what city this is. Because of that station, I wanted to say Chicago.
There's their filming location.
And I thought that too, and I was like, it's possible. I don't know. I know that there are some. I don't know. I've never been there.
It reminds me that
it's in Canada. So
even worse.
So it may be Toronto. So it looks similar to New York.
Yeah, it's Toronto. Yorkdale Subway. Well, that's Subway.
Remember the scene from the funeral? Or not the funeral, the fugitive? When they're like, oh, there's an L in the background. I can hear it. They're like, how do you know? I lived under there for like 20 years. No one's talking about. He's like, who's got an L? And that's when they find out. That's a good movie. We should watch that one.
I love that movie.
It is good.
They give him the worst fucking lines in that, though. Harrison Ford.
Yeah, he was terrible in that movie.
Yeah.
He was awful in that movie. But he wasn't. That was supposed to be Alec Baldwin. He turned it down, so they gave it to Harrison Ford.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones was the best in that. Yeah. That's what made everything.
Yeah, that movie, Harrison Ford, so handsome in Indiana Jones and his Han Solo, but acting... He does his lines pretty well in those two movies, and then that's it. I don't ever want to see him act again. I don't want him doing anything else. Yeah. He's not a good actor.
Not even as Thunderbolt Ross?
You can go as the... Now he's in a lot of stuff. He's in the Marvel world.
I don't want him doing it.
Han Solo and Indiana Jones, okay?
I don't want him doing that.
He did it. It's done. It's the best ever. No. So it's let it be written, let it be done. You know who said that?
I think that Alec Baldwin would have done a better job.
Alec Baldwin can allegedly shoot somebody again. No, I'm not. But never mind. Let's continue with our movie we watched.
Okay.
Daryl and Keller are meeting at somewhere in Toronto. that's fake America.
It is America.
Well, sure,
it's fake US.
It's North America.
It is North America. It's fake US. It's fake US. Okay, yes, yes.
Does Mexico have an L?
Huh?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think so. No. I'm going to say no.
I know it wouldn't be an underground thing.
No.
But so Keller is there in the rail car station telling Daryl that Cameron is weak. So that way Daryl doesn't go being a loose cannon. Dr. Root takes Cameron on a tour of the psychic gymnasium. Those were not my words. Those were Dr. Root's words.
I want to go to a psychic gymnasium.
I thought it was going to be a lot cooler than just a yoga master and a mat. Like, I thought there was going to be some wooden blocks or something like that where he would pick it up with his mind.
And some spinning things. There should be spinning things. Always spinning things.
No, I just picture fruit. And it's like that
Fruit Ninja? No.
It's like the movie Accepted.
I know the movie.
The guy has his own class for like, because he's trying to, what do you want to do when you're young? He's like, I always wanted to blow stuff up with my mind. And so they give him a bunch of fruit and he just stares at it.
Yes.
That's what I want. That's my expectation of the psychic gymnasium.
We got none of that. Instead, we get a yoga master named Dieter Tout.
I think a Pokemon stadium thing, too. There's the psychic gym.
Maybe.
With the psychic Pokemon.
Maybe. You would know better than I would in that.
Yeah, I'm a Pokemon master.
That's pretty cool.
I got that under my belt. If anybody else has a Pokemon masterhood, put that in the comments, guys. Let's talk.
I found it funny that they like, here's a yoga master, Dieter Tout. Here's a German guy who knows yoga. It's like you couldn't find like an Indian guy just to be like, hey, be a yoga.
No yogi.
No. They wanted like a guy that possibly had something to do with the Holocaust.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, especially if it's a psychic gymnasium. They need somebody who's willing to bend and twist your
I could see a little connection with that with the German guy, because it could be like, you know, he was part of the Third Reich's, like, you know, kind of like when they were trying to find like all the occult stuff, like that.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. But you know who they met? Indiana Jones, and he took him out. You can't have this.
Belongs to the museum. So Cameron is directed to sit facing the monitored yoga master, because they've got the electronic mind nodes or whatever. I don't know. I couldn't find anything they were called.
It's like an EKG for the brain.
But
he looked like he was about to die the whole time. Like,
I know.
There was nothing serene or comfortable about the way that guy looked.
He looked creepy.
It looked like he was slowly having a heart attack without them doing what they did.
Yeah.
Then Dr. Ruth instructs Cameron to start scanning the yoga master. And then we get some high-pitched droning sounds, and then Cameron nearly kills Dieter, but brings him back just as Dr. Ruth was about to inject him with ephemeral. Next, Dr. Ruth shows Cameron photos of another scanner, Benjamin Pierce, who has a sordid past. This lead may or may not be a part of Daryl's underground, so it's very iffy. They're trying to set up some stakes, which they failed at, because I was like, this dude's not.
Well, there was the whole part was just a strange setup. They're like, he looks all contorted, like he kind of has like MS or some shit.
Sure, yeah.
Like there's something wrong with him. And then they're like, well, he's an artist, and he's a fucking, go get his art.
Yeah.
You get his art, we get him. Just like. And then he goes, hi, I'd like to buy a piece for my apartment. I'm a rich man.
My apartment in Paris.
Yeah, it's a Paris apartment. It's special. Such shit.
That was terrible.
Yeah. And that's pretty much how it goes in the next scene. He goes to the art show, goes up to the piece. Yeah. The gallery owner comes up, pretty much says that, and the gallery owner's like, well, okay, well, let's get to talking.
And that's fucking Cronenberg art, too. All the weird shit, like, you know,
I did not like that. I did not like that.
Did you just find yourself uncomfortable where
very you're much,
it?
Very yeah. much. I looked away while that was going on. I did not like that one bit. I did not like the eyes in there. It was very unsettling. I did not like that art at all. It was very, very
For
creepy.
A second, the spinning thing in the middle, I thought that was going to be the guy like in there. Nice. I was like, oh, he's just scanning everybody like with an erection in the middle of it. Oh, my art, huh? Do you like this one over here? This one's got a head on the head. This one has three. It's like the fucking Island of Dr. Moreau. Sure. This one has three asses.
Oddly enough, Stephen Lack is now an artist.
That's
pretty much what he
me.
Does.
This is yeah. what the guy He's told him to do in the movie. He's like, you should do art.
Yeah. And then He's like, okay, I'm going to be a famous artist.
He's like, that one actor guy really told me what I should be doing.
Yeah, because it wasn't acting.
Yeah, he was like, well, somebody told me to be an artist, so I went into acting, and I realized it was the wrong art
like,
form.
Oh, they
me.
Meant painting.
Yeah. They're like, no, it was painting. It wasn't anything that to do with your mouth or face.
Or ability, like, on screen.
It almost felt like he was dubbed over. It was so bad.
I felt like there. I think that they.
Maybe.
Well, they.
There
they
was
dub,
a couple.
I think that they.
Oh, they.
They
redid
dub a
lines.
Lot. They
yeah.
would. They would do because of their poor quality sound back mm-hmm. then. They did a lot of dubbing back then. You know.
Sure.
A lot of times, especially because they just didn't have the right setup in these weird rooms or outdoors, so they would yeah. just film everything and then they would go back in and dub it with the actual actor, but it sounded horrible the way they did. They didn't do a good job.
But that was like a perfect version of like the 1980s, late 70s, you know, like what's the one douchebag art guy? Andy Warhol. Like
oh,
right?
okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that in Canada, America.
Canada, America.
And they're like having their, ooh, let's drink some wine and look at these weird art pieces here. And, oh, remember Biffy when this happened?
Biffy.
Yeah, that's Biffy.
His friend Biffy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Or
they had,
e-
they had
what
name
about
tags
Edie?
On.
His friend Edie.
Edie and Biffy.
He's Cedric. Oh.
You doing the Monica Geller? Or the Ross Geller?
That's the Ross. That's the Geller. Yeah, when you do the... If you can hear that sound, that's the two fists going together. It means like fuck you.
Yeah, oh. It was their way that they could do it in Dude, front of like their parents
without
or,
giving the finger. Even
yeah. Why don't I know that? I watched Friends.
Yeah,
it's like the one of maybe 10 things I remember from Friends.
I actually watched a lot of reruns too in my younger years.
You know what I heard? I heard you either watched Friends or you had friends. So,
ooh, that's a good one.
Fuck you,
that's
nerds.
A really
Fuck
good
you,
one.
Fuck you, nerds.
Yeah, that's good. You're fun.
Yeah,
telling jokes.
That's why I watched Seinfeld.
Watch that too. They came on the same night.
I know.
Thursday night. Thursday night lineup.
Yeah.
Cameron tries to get the address of Pierce from the gallery owner, but he doesn't budge.
Because that would be wrong. You don't just
know,
give
yeah.
out addresses.
Yeah, well, he wanted to meet the artist. Let me correct. Cameron wanted yeah. to meet the artist because that's what he does before he buys his
yeah,
art
but
piece.
Remember, he was like, the artist doesn't want to meet
yeah,
you. And then
yes.
he's like, well, can I just get his address? Like,
yes, that's true. Yes.
That's no.
Yeah, which
is poor writing in.
Yeah.
Also poor.
You know what? Before I go to see a movie, I like to meet all the actors in
yeah,
the movie
sure.
first. Could I get their addresses?
That's not going to happen.
Give me back my $1.98.
Yeah, $1.05.
$1.05. So instead, Cameron decides that he's going to use his newly harnessed scanning abilities to get the address from the gallery owner, which causes the gallery owner to bleed from his nose. A woman who seems extremely interested in who or what caused the gallery owner to receive such an injury looks around the gallery. She sends out some psychic waves that injure Cameron, revealing his intentions to the woman. Cameron drives to Pierce's barn. I don't know how far away it was, because it was night, I think, when he was at the gallery. And then when he arrives to the barn in the same clothes... It is morning, or okay. at least daylight.
I think they're implying it was kind of far out of town. That's a, okay. You're going to get the day and night thing. That's your time reference. So,
While Pierce and Cameron talk, there is a hit squad that surrounds Pierce's barn.
They all have shotguns, too. Uh-huh. That's it. No handguns.
Yeah.
Cameron is unable to convince the artist to reveal what he knows about Daryl. The hit squad now making entrance into Pierce's barn, kill Pierce. And Cameron takes his vengeance out on the attackers by killing some of them, but not all of them, with his scanning abilities.
I feel like one or two of them come back. I feel like he just pushed them all away. I feel like either it was a bad directing thing or something.
It was a bad directing thing, because did you see that he just kind of pushed them? He pushed them away, but then later they show him and they're like,
It looked, yeah.
For those of you, because it's an audio only medium.
I was doing a little acting.
Meg's had her left arm over her head in a like sort of chimpanzee thing.
Yeah, and her tongue
and
was hanging out,
and
the eyes were rolling up.
Yeah, the eyes were rolling because they were supposed to be dead, but it was from very little force. I mean, they did not fly hard, and they hit like it looked like styrofoam.
Yes.
But yeah. They all died as a result.
Supposedly,
I thought one of them did come back. No, there was multiple came back again. Okay.
I think the girl didn't come back.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing
her
again.
But there was the bald gentleman and then the taller one, because that's the one that he kills later on. But the fact we're jumping over is the little inside the head.
Oh yeah,
yes. His little hidey hole.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
He's like, this is where I have my meetings at.
Yeah, because the barn is Pierce's art studio, and there's a bunch of art pieces over there. And inside here is a big piece, which is like it's a personal piece for him, because it's just a head, a large head, probably like, I don't know, 25 feet long, 10
it's
feet
large,
high. Like it is very large, enough for two people to fit in on the inside of this head. And it looks nice in there. It looks like Pierce would hang out in there. You know, because it looked like there'd be some cushions or something set up in there.
But I feel like he's the only one that got to do a little leeway with what he wanted to do, and it was still terrible because he was like doing like the two hands under the chin. Look at him. And
that's
then
what artists do. Don't you know any artists?
No, I don't.
That's the typical.
Well, I know one. They don't do that though. They just, you know, talk a lot about art and, you know, like brush strokes and, you know, things of that nature.
I don't know. I don't think that's true.
I don't know an artist like
that. I don't think you know an artist.
Probably not. Probably just a painter, like a house painter.
A house painter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With the attackers now handled, before Pierce can really pass on to the next phase of death, he tells Cameron to search out Kim Obrist, who's played by Jennifer O'Neill.
The beautiful Jennifer O'Neill.
Back at Cameron's hotel, he uses ephemeral to quiet the distorted voices that he hears so he can have a nap or sleep. As he wakes up later that night, going out to look for Kim Obrist. After being scanned, so he finds the house, which I don't know how he finds. Nobody told him the address. If there was an image that was shared, they did not telegraph that, correct? They didn't even telegraph that between Pierce and Cameron. Because I'm like, how the hell does he know to go look? Where?
Well, the one thing he does, he calls in what happened. And that he did, that he's looking for that girl. So maybe they looked her up, or maybe they knew.
I missed that. I must have missed that part. Because I don't recall that.
And there's a brief phone call.
And it's so choppy. You know, the movie's so choppy.
Yeah, yeah.
I never knew what was going on. I mean, half the time I was like, if I think back to a scene, I can't remember what order it went in, or, you know, everything. It's just so all over the place.
I think I can, because I think I'm partially a scanner.
Probably.
I scanned this movie.
Did you?
Yes, it's been scanned.
Oh, I can't wait to bring up that. So after finding where Kim Obrist is living, he's scanned, and then he's taken to meet Kim. Turns out that she was at the gallery the other night, and she was the one who made Cameron's nose bleed. Cameron then requests her help. We cut to the exterior of Kim's place, where Daryl and other followers surround Kim and her group, their house, or whatever this is in Toronto. Back inside Kim's place, the scanners are group bonding or chanting as another hit squad comes in to shoot up the group. But Kim uses her ability to kill a man and then set the apartment on fire, allowing Cameron and some other fellow scanners to escape. Cameron tries to shake Kim out of shock, and then reveals the concept plan to Kim. Daryl and his henchmen kill some other scanners, except for Kim and Cameron, who do manage to mostly escape unharmed into a basement. This happens because they're in a van and they're driving down the road, and then the van that the underground scanners are following in, they open up their nifty little slatted windows that they have on their van and just shove a bunch of shotguns out there and just start shooting it up. And this causes the van that the Kim's group and Cameron were driving in to crash into some convenience store, some store.
I think it's a record store.
That's correct. Yeah, it is a record store, yes. And that's how they escape into the basement to wait out.
I think it was called Fine Grooves.
But one of Daryl's henchmen is out hunting for Kim and Cameron with a shotgun. And now having cornered Kim and Cameron in the basement, he is forced by Cameron through scanning abilities to give up his ephemeral. I thought he was going to turn the shotgun on him.
No, he said, show me what you know.
I thought he was going to as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think we're supposed to believe that Cameron's not that kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
He doesn't want to do it in front of his new girlfriend.
Yeah.
Sure.
Frosted Grace.
Before he is told to hand over the ephemeral, he does tell he is told to tell Cameron what he knows, or show him what he knows. And we cut to a bioengineering manufacturing plant where ephemeral is produced. A disguised Cameron infiltrates the plant. Now, having found a computer, Cameron finds information on a project called RIPE. At a private bar, Dr. Ruth receives a phone call from Cameron. He informs Dr. Ruth that he has an informant that he wants to bring in to see Dr. Ruth. Keller and Daryl meet again in their normal spot. Keller is worried about the informant, so Daryl instructs Keller to kill the informant. Kim and Cameron are flown by helicopter to the concept building. As I wonder where they were picked up at. They're like, hey, be inconspicuous about picking us up in your helicopter, please.
We're on the run.
Yeah. Nobody will know. Keller and Dr. Ruth argue about who gets to question the informant, Kim, and who will question Cameron. There's a little pissing contest that goes on, but Keller gets his way and is interviewing Kim. Dr. Ruth and Cameron talk. Before their interview, Kim and Cameron were given fake ephemeral injections just in case something exactly like this scenario were to go down.
Never doubt Dr. Ruth.
Never doubt. Cameron turns the tables by questioning Dr. Ruth about RIPE. He explains that the production of ephemeral is being run by Daryl and the RIPE program, distributes that ephemeral throughout the country. Dr. Ruth wants Cameron to scan the computer like it was a living mind. This can never happen. This is not a thing that can legitimately happen.
Not even in the 80s. If we're psychic. Now it could.
Only if you had a chip in your brain.
Nope.
If you didn't have a chip in your brain, you could not. What's your reasoning?
He's a scanner. Scanners can do lots of things.
So Keller interviews Kim alone, and he assaults her when she tries to leave the interview room. Kim scans Keller after being threatened with death, which allows her to escape. When Keller recovers, he sets off a building-wide alarm. Dr. Root.
The big red button.
Yep.
I was like, she's going to hit that big red button. I know it. I was right there, sitting there, looking at me. And when he hit it, I was like, thank God. Otherwise, I'd feel terrible.
And that's always the best place to put your camera controls, are in the interrogation room in which you're recording. Dr. Ruth is more worried about the RIPE program, where Cameron is more worried about Kim, and takes off to find Kim in the concept building. Keller gives orders to kill all scanners. Dr. Ruth monologues to the audience about his past mistakes, wishing he could correct them.
That was so weird, man. That was such a strange thought process that happened there. Because he even went like birds. Oh, no, not birds. Wait a minute. Hold on. Go back to what we were thinking. Sure. Like, he went off in a tangent that he had to write himself. It was so fucking weird.
Yes.
I think what they were doing there was saying that you, the audience, is scanning his brain.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, giving you the perspective of the scanner, kind of. And I think that Project Ripe was to get to the fruits of their labor.
Sure.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. Nice. See?
I agree with you. Yeah, like, yeah. There's a reason yeah. why it was called
Ripe. But I don't,
Ripe.
So yes. I don't think they even go over this the rest of the time, but why do they need vats and vats and vats of this fucking drug?
I don't know why. I don't know if those were the drugs. Like, I know what scene you're talking
all
about.
All they make is ephemeral, apparently. That's what all that fucking place makes it, but there's fucking tankers of this shit.
Yeah, I don't understand. I didn't even think about that. Then it must have been a very large, very, very large scale operation if they were yeah. having, if there were that many vats. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
because they were, remember, they were giving it to pregnant women to create new scanners.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. what it was. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there, yeah. it was, yeah. it's the boys, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Putting the blue shit in them.
Create their own army.
Too bad they don't get laser eyes, too.
they'd be too hands. Powerful. Yeah, yeah.
Everybody loves. Does it stop at the wrist or yeah. does it go all the way
it's
up?
Just fire hands.
Keller finds Dr. Root having a crisis of self in an interview room, and then Keller, using his Colt 1911, executes Dr. Root, and Cameron feels that death of Dr. Root through psychic reverberation, like he was some type of Jedi.
Or their connection was deeper than we knew.
Kim and Cameron find each other in the Consec building. Kim tells Cameron that Keller tried to kill her. Cameron now knows that Keller is Daryl's partner in this whole scheme. The pair are trapped by a couple of guards. Too bad for those homies because they become deeply disturbed by projections of their mothers. At least one of them is.
One of them did, yeah.
I don't know about the other guy. Blood yeah, on his hand? That's all I got.
They don't show what the other guy saw, but he's also weeping.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's also the one who was able to tell them what happened. Yeah. While the other one was still weeping.
They,
it was very, I don't know. I mean.
Yeah. I understand that, sure, if that guy's mother was dead and now he's seeing his dead mother in front of him, not the blood on the hand guy, but the other guy who was...
Even if she's alive, he was seeing that he was holding a gun on his mother.
Sure.
So that was what I think was really upsetting him, was that he pulled a gun on his mother.
Sure.
But the other one... I don't know why he was upset. They didn't show us. I don't think they could afford to hire another old lady. They were like, we've got one old lady. We can't have two. Maybe they're brothers and there's just one old lady.
Sure.
That's the big secret. They were brothers. Yeah, they were both Marthas. I was like, my mother's name is Martha too.
What?
Why is he saying that name?
Why?
Oh. But when the guards are found by Keller... He is now informed that the scanners have escaped. Kim and Cameron stop at a gas station to use a payphone so Cameron can plug into the computer.
A payphone, children, is a phone that's out in the middle of nowhere that you can use to call people if you have change.
It was usually connected to a telephone line.
I saw one the other day. It was in the mall.
Oh.
I was in a mall the other day. Not a real mall.
Was it a working
phone?
Was it
a real mall? Yeah. You could put... a credit card in it.
Oh.
I think you could put coins in it too. I didn't stick around. I just looked at it. I was on my way to the ladies' room.
I called.
It was next to some drinking fountains.
Nice.
Drinking fountains are fountains that give water straight to your mouth if you're thirsty. They came before the water bottle.
They did. So after picking up the phone, he doesn't dial anything. He just picks up the phone and thinks about connecting about connecting to the Consec computer network.
Yeah, why dial when you have psychic abilities?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's stupid. Why would you use your hands?
The Consec computer tech informs Keller that they can't access the information on the network anymore because everybody's been locked out. However, they can see what information is being accessed. And then we cut to Cameron, who is downloading all this data into his brain. And then Keller finally puts two and two together, figuring out that Cameron is scanning the computer, and he wants to hurt Cameron. The computer tech says that he could override the self-destruct, which would blow the circuits of the power or the computer, I'm not sure, but he needs written authorization from the CEO. Well, Keller says, I've got all the authorization you need, as he waves the gun in his hand and points the 1911 at some other computer tech. Now the computer guy sends a self-destruct code, and a countdown begins. Keller backs away from the tape drives and other consoles. One of the computer techs is, nothing's going to happen.
No, you know, I the part I loved is when he was doing it, you would hear the tape noise.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, got it. Huh. Keep going. Keep spinning, my friend. My zeros and one friend. I love you.
The countdown has reached zero. And we cut back to Cameron, who is now struggling against the pain of circuits being destroyed. The electric current is so powerful that the overhead telephone line catches fire, scaring a man, gassing up his car, and causes him to drop the still-flowing gas handle. You know an explosion's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Explosions happen everywhere. First, in the computer lab at CONSEC, which sends one guy thrown back through the plate window.
People
and a
around.
Frame.
They're always throwing them around. Like, that's the best thing to do. Hey, well, let's throw. We need somebody to throw across the room.
I was able to see the wire on the chair.
Oh.
It was very brief, but it was enough to be like, it was there. Then Keller gets blown up and thrown back through the door, and he dies. And then the telephone line sparks on the puddle of gasoline, which causes the car and the gas pumps to explode. And then the phone booth, where Kim and Cameron had just been seconds before. Now, having fled from the gas station, Kim and Cameron end up at a family doctor. This is a doctor that was on the list. With you know, only Cameron knows the list in his head, which is scary because then he'd be like, yeah, that person was on the list. Well, the doctor works out of a house because the waiting room is a front room, and that's where Kim waits as Cameron goes to interrupt an exam. But while that's happening, Kim is scanned by a woman, but then it cuts back to Kim, and then it cuts back to the belly of the woman, and then Kim has to leave the room. The interrupted doctor tells his patient, excuse me, while he goes to answer this most urgent question for this man he doesn't even know about a drug that he administers daily. Like, he doesn't find out anything at all, which we find out here comes from Kim. When he leaves the doctor's, the patient exam room, and Kim's like, I got scanned. And it wasn't by a woman, it was by a fetus. And oh, it's all starting to come together. But as they're talking, they're standing in front of a window and Kim is shot by a tranquilizer dart. They run from the doctor's house. They don't make it far before Kim collapses due to the tranq. And then Daryl appears, shooting Cameron with a dart as well. Back at Biocarbon Amalgamate, which is the company that makes ephemeral, Cameron wakes up in Daryl's office. He asks after Kim. Daryl tells him she is okay. And now the pair talk. Daryl reveals that Dr. Root is the father of Cameron and Daryl. They are brothers. Cameron can't believe it. Daryl shows him.
Do you know your dad? Do you know your?
Yeah, I was like, well,
I gotta do the iron sirens. So iron sirens like, do you know your dad? Do you know your mom? Do you remember anything from when you were a kid?
Like, I hadn't put it together, but as soon as he asked the first question, I was like, okay, no. You don't ask questions like that unless you're going to be answering them in the movie. Daryl shows Cameron an ad, a drug ad about the drug ephemeral from 1947, and it is responsible for creating the first scanners, Daryl and Cameron. It's why they are the oldest scanners and the most powerful. Daryl becomes enraged when he tells him that he is exactly like Dr. Ruth, their papa. Cameron attacks Daryl. In return, Daryl scans Cameron, causing the veins on Cameron's arms to swell and bleed, which was pretty cool. I did find that was a pretty cool effect. Then Cameron turns the tables and scans Daryl, which forces the veins on Daryl's face to engorge. Cameron's chest and face begin to bleed from Daryl's scan. Cameron tears pieces of flesh from his face, and with one final push, Cameron sets himself on fire, smiling.
After
that was
his
with
eyeballs
his fire
explode.
Hands. Oh, yeah.
Fire hands.
And his
oh,
eyeballs.
Yes. And his eyes explode. Yes. Daryl's eyes turn white as he screams psychically. And then it cuts to black. We fade in on Kim waking up from her tranquilizer dart-induced sleep. There's no one around. She exits through a door where she finds the burnt body of Cameron. Except she feels the presence of Cameron in the corner of the room behind a couch under a coat. When Cameron shows his face, it is the face of Daryl. Oh, snap. Cameron switched psyches with Daryl. You can tell by the eyes because he had green eyes.
It was super creepy, but when you looked at me because the fucking your laptop, there's like blue riding on your eyes, and I thought you were scanning me.
Oh, nice.
I was like, motherfucker, better scan yourself. Don't scan me.
And roll credits.
The credits were cool, though. I gotta say, it was the... it was like old computer screen green.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't watch the credits.
The credits were really, they were actually pretty cool. I liked the way they did it.
I fell asleep last night. I had to rewatch today, so I didn't finish the, I didn't watch the credits. I just watched the end.
You did?
I watched what I missed.
It was cool. Like, I don't know. It was, I'm going to guess it was probably done on a computer screen.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, I'm guessing. I'm just guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Josh.
I remember doing the turtle. You know, you tell it what to do and it goes in circles and makes lines.
Yeah.
Remember that program?
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it was like early Apple shit.
Yeah, I think maybe Oregon Trail came out for me.
That was just straight up on like DOS stuff.
Oregon Trail. Kind of thing,
yeah. Yep, yep. Yeah,
that was a fun game.
Didn't do a whole lot of DOS games.
But, okay. We doing?
Yeah, yeah. Like we're at. This is the end of the movie.
This is the end of the movie.
The movie's over.
Like
the credits have rolled.
Yep, yep. And if you want us to come back for your rating, we can.
No, I'm good. Overall, we've discussed this all the time. It's poorly done. The idea is unique. I'll say that.
Yes.
There's some interesting aspects of it. Feel like they missed the mark on just a couple things, but like I said, could that be budget? Could that be time? You know what I mean? Like that, those all factor into movies, you know, of course. But overall, it's not the worst. You know, like it doesn't hold you the entire time, but it kind of drags you behind it. You know, like you're on a leash. And you're like, all right, I'm going with you. I'm going. To where some movies you're just like, nope, God, like I'm struggling to get through this. I didn't struggle to get through it. It was just like you said earlier, it's a little bit too long, and they just, you know, they didn't get to do what they wanted to. I felt like, and also Cronenberg was still not fully, you know, like he was trying to push people to do what he wanted instead of let them act, you know, like actually act. So I feel like that kind of hurt the thing, but so at the end of the day, I'm gonna rate this rating now.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to, or we can come back to you if you don't have one.
Oh yeah, definitely too. I got a rating for you. It's gonna be 2 frosted grays.
Ooh, frosted grays.
2 frosted grays.
All right.
Out of 5 frosted grays.
Out of 5. 2 out of 5. All yeah. right.
If they would have showed me one boob. Especially a frosted gray boob? Mm-hmm.
Maybe a different rating.
No, I don't think there's any boobies in this. They didn't have time. They were too busy fucking scanning everything, you know?
Yeah, they
maybe
some
scanning sex would have been cool. They're like, oh, scan me harder, you know?
Yeah, that would have been
big
something.
Mountains of skin.
That would have been
Scanges.
I don't think Cronenberg leans into that.
I think it would make me uncomfortable without that particular actor.
I mean, in a few years, he's got The Fly coming out. You know,
true,
little Gina Davis.
Yep, yep.
And Jeff Goldblum's.
Goldblum's.
Throws his Goldblums everywhere. But anyways, yeah. Megan, what'd you think? What'd you think, Megs, huh? Yeah.
Well, let me tell you what I think.
Let's hear it.
I think the movie could have been better.
Mm.
I thought it was incredibly choppy. The acting, of course, was wooden.
Mm.
The obvious voiceovers that they had to do in order, you know, whether they, I'm assuming they used the same actors, but it was so much. But the storyline was good. I would like to see this done better.
Yeah.
But
a remake, a remake would be great.
Yeah. And Ironside was great.
Yeah.
Like he really was really good. I mean.
He just is Ironside. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's no if, and, or buts around it. He's just Ironside. He does that.
It made me sad because he was giving it a lot of his all, and everybody else was just kind of like, I mean, it was their all too, which was disappointing. I would give this movie, and mainly because the storyline in Ironside, I'd give it 2 fire hands.
Okay. Oh, 2 fire hands. All right. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I think I like his later stuff better. David Cronenberg's movies. I enjoyed the premise of this. I thought it was a really cool premise. I agree. I like that because you're looping in. You could do some reworking and make it MKUltra. You make it a little bit more known, you know, just pop culture stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you could do a version of Jumpers with this, basically. Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
just throw Christian Haydenson in there. You know, it's perfect.
Everybody would love it.
Yeah.
I thought some of the dialogue was pretty poor.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think the writing was that great. I'm going to give this.
I think this happened during the gas shortage, so they probably didn't, you know, they were more fixing
possibly.
It on that. God, we just got to sit around and get gas all day. We don't have time to finish writing this on our typewriters, our portable typewriters.
I'm going to give this 2 syringes. Two syringes out of 5.
Two
ephemeral filled syringes out of 5.
Not heroin.
No.
Not well, what's the truth serum?
Sodium pentothal.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Cuz that is also something else that MK Ultra experimented with as well. Yes. Well, those were our final reactions and our ratings for Scanners. Next, we will be going over our last pick of this rotation of
Ironside. The last of the Ironside.
Yep.
What's it smell like?
I'm actually sort of excited to get through it.
Yeah.
I'd like to move on to something else because this group, this selection of movies was very, very small. And
I mean,
there's not a whole dated.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
The problem was that, like, when we came up with this list, I believe we were drinking at a bar for the most part.
Yeah, that happened.
I think fucking
there was definitely alcohol involved.
Fucking whatchamacallit was on TV.
Probably Total Recall.
No, yeah. Top Gun.
Oh, Top Gun.
I think was on fucking TV. And we're like, oh, Michael Ironside movies.
Sure,
great.
We were
not realizing that all he has been is a fucking side piece, you know?
Side piece.
Yeah, this is one of those kids, skittibidi-dibbidies.
It's like skittibidi one of those. Toilet?
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
I still don't know.
But yeah, so it's, yeah. It's been difficult. The representation of him isn't there because I think he's a voice actor too.
Yes.
And there's more to Ironside.
Much more to Ironside.
Yeah. There's a lot because he does voice acting as well, and there are many video games out there where he is the voice actor,
the main guy,
and we can't review that because that's more of a. Online.
Megan can't play video games.
I can't play video games.
She's got two right thumbs.
So with that being said, because we have a small pool to choose from, it's probably a movie that many, many people have seen. It has one of the best action the actors.
Should we sing the song? Remember the For a Mama? What are you doing?
I'm doing Total Recall.
Oh, that's what I thought. That's what I was going to go. For the memories of a lifetime. Recall. You don't remember that?
I don't.
That was the ad for the fucking thing.
I'm glad
I watched this movie
that.
So many fucking times. I love this movie, man.
It is a fun movie. Is it dated? Yes, because I've watched it. Previous to watching it again,
but just blows away the remake they did, which is trash.
Sharon Stone is so hot in this movie. She looks great.
Like, I'm a crazy
when she fucking does the thing.
When she does the tie up,
I was like, I'm gonna go to Jacktown real quick. I'll be back.
Yep. And then you got Arnold at some of his
peak.
Height. Like
peak
this.
Arnold.
This is
yeah.
What more could you ask for? Like it is. It's an action movie. It's a sci-fi action movie.
You get your culmination bad guys, which is what's the other guy's name?
Ronnie Cox.
It's Ronnie Cox in Ironside, and they have this relationship that's like he's like you fucking idiot, like he hates him so much, but he needs him. It's your prototypical 90s action movie.
Yep,
it is beautiful.
Yep, I think it does a. It is not a beat for beat adaptation of was it a Philip K. Dick short story?
That I'm not
Total
sure.
Recall
of.
Or it's not a good 1-to-1 comparison from the short story or the novel to because it is.
Well, and your boy from The Vagrant is in it, isn't he? Isn't he Quato?
You mean Sam?
Sam Bell, what is it?
No, it's Bell.
Don't worry.
Bello. That's how you say
Marshall Bell.
Yes.
Marshall Bell.
Yep, yeah. Marshall Bell is in it as well, yeah. So this is
Ironside are very close friends.
Yeah, because that's what I was just about to say, is that this is going to be movie number two that has Michael Ironside and Marshall Bell in it playing the two sides. I guess Michael Ironside really wasn't chasing after Bell and the Vagrant.
They're considered antagonists. Right?
Sure. Well, yeah.
Both of them to a point.
Yeah.
Because they're against the protagonist.
Yeah, but he wasn't. I don't even think he, Ironside didn't even acknowledge the Vagrant in that movie.
But you know the funny part?
I wouldn't either.
Nowadays, it's kind of ruined because all I can imagine is fucking Rick and Morty with the Quato, and then the Quato that had a Quato that had a Quato, and he just goes, "Open your mind."
It's a 1966 short story by Philip K. Dick called "We Can Remember It For You Wholesale." That's the name of it.
Early imagining.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it really is. I don't know. I have not read that short story, but I believe it's just a construction worker who receives an implanted memory from a fantastical adventure on Mars. I believe that's the premise of the short story, and then everything else that happens in the movie Total Recall is where it ends. I would say very similar to another Michael Ironside featured movie, Starship Troopers, where Starship Troopers is not a one-for-one adaptation of what happens in the short story book. I think it was a book.
That has scanners in it.
Ooh. Yeah. It does have it.
MPH is a scanner.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But the Heinlein book or novel is much different than the movie itself.
Mm.
But that's because the Heinlein one was very much more into the what was not happening in the battle. The battle that was experienced, or the physical conflicts that were actually experienced, maybe were two chapters. And then the rest of it was the experience of the protagonist's point of view going up from enlisting to the battle that he is in.
Mm.
So it's vastly different, but still very entertaining. I still enjoy watching Total Recall, and that's why we're going to watch Total Recall again.
Yeah.
Well, with that out of the way, now we come to our next segment. Give me the juice.
Ooh, the juice.
Megs, what have you been reading, watching?
What you been juicing on?
What have I been juicing on?
Animal watching, or I don't know, quilting. I don't know.
I wish I'd been quilting. Gosh, I mean, I finished everything that I was watching, and so I'm kind of. I did start the new Caitlin Olsen show.
What is it?
The I don't want to say Brilliant Minds because that's the Zachary Quinto one.
It starts with a P.
God, that fucking. I think that the intro for that played like 15 times the other day. He's like, I want to get into the minds of my patients. I want to experience and see what they see. And he's like fucking dancing a jig at one point or some shit.
Like, what doctor are you, Zachary Quinto? Like, I don't know any doctor that's like you. Because there isn't one. Are you? Let's all Google it.
Yeah, I don't know why it's taking me so long to. Apparently, I'm
high potential.
My phone's just high potential.
High potential.
It's one of those. It's not a great show. It's a typical network television show that's made for kind of the older crowd. It's trying to be like a Monk, not as good as a Psych, but it's entertaining enough that I will watch it. If there's nothing else on, I'm going to watch it because I like Caitlin Olson and I like that. I like what's his name who plays her. Her co-star, he's been around for a long time.
Oh, I don't recall who.
Daniel Sanjata. He was on Law and Order SVU back in the day. That's what I know him from. And he did an episode of 30 Rock where he really stood out. Those are the two things I know him from.
Okay.
But he's a good looking guy. I like the show. It's not great, but it's fun to watch. So check it out.
Okay.
And if you like.
And Caitlin Olsen's always pretty
great
to look at.
But it's fun to watch. You can see a bird. What's that bird doing on there?
Oh, there's another problem. There are a lot of kids, and they're very annoying on the show. She's a mother. Thing. She plays a mother.
That's twice in a row she's playing mother, though.
Yeah.
She did it in that movie. What was the one with the kid, the coming of age movie shit?
No.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Two mother roles in a row.
Yeah, two. She's getting into the mother roles. Well, I mean, you know, she's in her 40s, but
it wouldn't be bad if she was like the, you know, like maybe that, like a 90s quintessential mom that's like drunk on wine the whole time or something.
Yeah. Cuz that movie was terrible. And
no, she was like, "Be good kids. I love you." Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and on this she does play the overly sentimental mother to a certain extent. The kids are obnoxious and unnecessary as far as I guess she needs the kids for her storyline, but they could be less annoying.
I mean,
maybe
children,
mute. So. Mute would be great.
I don't think they can really do that.
Oh.
Yeah. Because those kids aren't actually mute.
Oh.
That would probably have to hire
the,
it would be
they'd have to hire the mute.
Yeah, because the kids, the angsty daughter and the annoying wannabe brilliant son, and then there's a baby.
Was that the nanny one?
This is that show that she's on right now.
The High Potential.
Oh, no, okay, yeah, okay. No, yeah. She is a mother in that one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got three children on the show with her next door neighbor slash.
Oh, this will go
friend.
Really yeah. well into mine.
Oh.
I briefly told Trevor about this already because I just needed to talk to somebody about it. But it's on Netflix. It's called. Officer Martial Arts or some shit like that, or Officer Karate Guy. I don't remember what it's called, something like that. But it's a Korean movie. Officer Black Belt.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, Officer Black Belt.
That's neat.
So it's a Korean movie. I didn't watch it in Korean. I watched it in English. I didn't really even pay attention. I just kind of let it go because the voices weren't that bad. Normally, if it's a bad voiceover, I'll watch it in Korean and just have subtitles on. I don't mind doing that. But for this one, I was kind of like out of it, and I was like, I was hungover. All right, so here I'm going to give you this first 5 minutes of this movie. That's it. That's all I'm going to talk about. So he's like, I'm good at everything. I've been good at esports games. I'm good at like the kendo fighting, all this stuff. So he basically knows a lot of karate, jiu-jitsu, fighting, and stuff like that. And he never loses. But he does fuck with people, and he'll do like a raspberry sometimes just to get in their head, and then he beats the shit out of them, like kind of stuff. So, but he's a good kid. And like he's hanging out with his friends one day, and his dad or whoever he works for, or it's his dad, I can't remember that part. I think it's his dad, owns like some kind of food, like a restaurant or something like that. So he has to go get his bike and deliver it. when he goes and delivers it, there's this like cop in like full like kind of battle attire, you know, like a vest on and all this stuff, and he's fighting this other guy in like a rainy fucking alley, of course. So then like the fight turns the other way, and the cop gets like stabbed by a broken bottle, and it like goes. And then he just goes over there and ninja kicks the guy one time in the head, and he's out. He looks down and he has a fucking an anklet on. Now the whole thing for the anklets is not, hey, you're in a program because you were in jail. It's very specific to pedophiles.
Oh,
so the whole time in this movie, this guy is chasing and beating up pedophiles and preventing children from getting molested.
Oh, the end.
No, it's there's a lot to it, but I'm just giving you the beginning of this movie. It's very interesting, and it caught me off guard completely because it's called Officer Black Belt, and you're like, oh, he's gonna fight people. He know, well, I'm like, no, there's some pedophilia in here. Like, there's some moments that are gonna make you feel a little awkward. Like, yeah. So that was, yeah. I was hungover watching that, and I was like, I think I dropped the remote. I was like, whatever. We're stuck here. This is life right now.
This is what it is.
It's entertaining. It's just, it has some of those moments that feel kind of like just irky. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, whatever. If you want to check it out, if you're not scared of pedophilia, if you have children, maybe don't watch it.
Yeah,
you know, probably. But, you know, if you know. Well, so Trevor, what about you? Did you watch anything about with children in it or pedophiles?
No. I did want to give like the log line or whatever for Officer Black Belt. A delivery guy turned martial arts officer kicks ass and take names in this buddy comedy from Jason Kim.
Boom.
It does hide the fact that they are pedophiles.
It does hide the fact.
They're like, no, we're not going to mention that. We're going to let you find that out.
That's a little treat, a little surprise.
What have I been watching? Well, I started a show called The Ark on Peacock.
I've seen that on
NBC, whatever. It is very slow. It is very almost procedural. So the premise is that there's this space ship, for lack of a better term, that's been put on a course to go to another planet and colonize it because, you know, humanity's doomed on Earth. And then a unexpected and very impactful event happens to the spaceship, which now thrusts everybody who really was not qualified to take care of the spaceship into a position to now have to take care of the spaceship and now have to, and also force the passengers that are left alive to try and extend life support and other such factors for a longer period of time. It reminds me in a way of like '90s-ish type of like Earth 2.
Who's on it? Anybody?
Nobody. There is nobody. Like, these are all like no name or like non-American actors and actresses.
And it's on Peacock?
On Peacock, yeah. It might be a Canadian production, actually.
Not a Canadian production.
Yep. It's not exciting. Sometimes I don't mind watching it because there's really no stakes in it. It's like,
and it's called The Ark or Ark?
The Ark. A-R-K. A-R-K. Like the Ark.
Like
from
Noah's
the
Ark.
Yep. That old Jewish fable. Yep.
Bible talk.
Yeah.
With Trevor Brown.
Maybe we won't do Bible talk with that.
We can do that. It's just talking about it. You don't have to fucking.
All right. Yeah. True. Very true.
Actually, we're not doing that on this. That'll be our next podcast.
Oh, Joanne Whaley's in it.
Yeah. See, no, that doesn't ring a bell.
That's the ex-wife of Iceman. What's his name?
Bobby?
No.
Iceman?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Val?
Val Kilmer. That's Val Kilmer's wife.
Oh. Yeah. The
She's the mother of his kids.
Is she? I'd have to see her picture.
She was in... Well, she was in Willow with him. I think that's where they...
Yeah, she was in the second Willow, too. She was the queen.
I'd have to see the picture of her.
She was a ginger in the
original. Yeah, no, I remember her from there.
So now she looks like this.
I don't think so.
Is she the computer, maybe?
Maybe.
She's like, I am the computer.
It's possible because it does. The computer does have a female voice, and I haven't seen her.
You've been scanned.
Yeah, no. She must be. Then she is strictly being used as a voice. Yeah, she has to be used as. Maybe that's coming from something else. Cause I don't see her name.
Are we looking at the wrong arc?
It might be possible, cause the one that I'm currently perusing on under IMDb does not show her on there. Yeah, cause there's Christine Burke.
All right, I don't know how I hit that. Did I just hit the wrong arc?
Oh, this was it was a sci-fi show.
Oh, I hit the wrong arc. I hit the other arc. I was. Looking at this arc, at the 2023 arc, and for some reason I hit the 2015 arc. I don't know any of these people.
It's like a video game.
I was all excited about those other people.
This one looks familiar.
Yeah, no, like I said, yeah. None of these people to me.
Yeah, no.
To me. Maybe to other listeners, people might know them, but I don't know any of them.
Nope.
Yeah. So that's what's new. I've also been watching The Penguin, but if you haven't been watching The Penguin, watch The Penguin.
Okay. When you said that, I got scared. I was like, what? You don't like it? I thought you liked it. Okay.
Some of them know that the lead actress in the arc, she was in The Haunting of Bly Manor, but just for two episodes.
Oh.
And then Breaking Dawn, Twilight Saga. But she was a... like a walk-on or something like that.
I wouldn't know about that.
Yep. So a lot of those actors from that show, relatively unknown. But The Penguin, top-notch.
Okay.
Top-notch. There's not even... There's,
one tiny thing that's bothering me.
Okay.
Don't tell me if it's going to ruin it for me.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
We'll discuss it next
time. It is a very good comic universe series that... hasn't featured any comic book heroes so far, so that isn't a spoiler for anything, but that's what we've been watching. Josh, I don't have anything for you to read.
Damn it, he was really looking forward to something tonight.
Yeah, I really want to display my reading abilities to you.
he's been really excited to show people really he can excited. Read.
Well, thank you for listening. You can find us on Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour. You can email us at theamateurmoviereviewhour@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, which is theamateurmoviereviewhour.com. If you haven't or you would like to, you can leave a comment on Spotify. You can give us a rating and a comment on Apple Podcasts as well, or you could do that at our email. But I don't have anything further. Well, good. Okay. So thanks for listening. Check you later.
Good night.
You've been scared.